It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday the 17th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Remember when President Barack Obama was first sworn in and people were worried about allowing him to keep his BlackBerry? Well, that was the beginning of two terms that saw the president lean into the growing influence of technology, consumer and otherwise, on our world. A chief technology officer for the administration, online petitions at whitehouse.gov, presidential YouTube chats. Since this is his last week, we wanted to talk about a few parts of President Obama's tech legacy with Nanette Burns, who wrote about this as senior editor at MIT's Technology Review. Hi, Nanette. In some ways, President Obama has been a pretty tech-forward president, hasn't he?
There seems to be, you know, great respect and even affection for him among leaders in the Valley. And he created this position of chief technology officer. And right now it's being held by a Google veteran, Megan Smith. And I think that's one example of the ability he's had to bring technology experts into government to work in government.
As much as he's tried, Obama hasn't been perfect, right?
Yes. I think overall, something we have spent a lot of time covering and we're quite interested in was the stimulus package. Of the $800 billion of that total stimulus package, $100 billion of it was earmarked for technology and R&D, a lot of it going to clean energy initiatives. And you may sense where I'm going on this. One of the companies that was supported was Solyndra, whose 2011 bankruptcy was another black eye. But even more broadly, while that stimulus spending did some very positive things, putting wind and solar and renewable energies, putting them in the forefront, energy policy is a very long-term process, and it just didn't create the number of jobs or the economy, I guess, that had been promised around these technologies. And that was a disappointment.
It was kind of an unprecedented move, right, when Barack and Michelle Obama headlined the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas last year. I was there, and it was really interesting to see him make this argument there to the audience that the tech community really needs to tackle big problems, not just kind of, you know, get your Uber to your house kind of problems, but really, really, really big problems. Do you think he's been successful in making that argument?
I think so. And I do think many in the tech community shared that there's been a lot of soul searching around why we haven't seen a more dramatic improvement in some of these big issues, right? And including new technology approaches for climate change. But of course, it's much harder and a much bigger challenge to figure out something on the order of climate change and the impacts of that. So that's the rub, I guess.
Nanette Burns is a senior editor at MIT Technology Review. Nanette, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Virtual reality has a lot of potential applications and close to zero killer apps. That's because the hardware and the content it delivers are both still in their infancy. But it hasn't stopped a large number of industries from experimenting. This includes the architecture and real estate business, where immersive renderings of all kinds of buildings can help sell properties and larger projects. Grayspace is a new company working in this area to take things like technical drawings called CAD drawings and turn them into something more realistic. One of its co-founders is Matthew Hoffman, and he's here to talk virtual reality. Matthew, hello. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. So how has the architecture industry changed thanks to virtual reality?
Yeah, I think for the first time, it's really given architects a way to communicate their designs to the public and to their clients in a more truthful way, because it's tougher to fake. For instance, with a 2D image, you can fake perspective. In VR, you can't necessarily do that because the user is able to look around 360 and they're really processing it as a real space instead of just a flat image that they're looking at.
So tell me about Grayspace. What does Grayspace do?
So we take the 3D model file from the architect, their CAD drawings, and we render it ourselves and essentially run it through our VR software to make it, you know, the full kind of VR experience.
Tell me more about like how it works and how you're planning to use it or become a successful company.
Yeah, so it's entirely web-based, which means that anyone can pull up their images on a computer, a laptop, an iPad, or their phone. And that works very well for architects because the headsets work in certain instances, but a lot of times people also get weirded out wearing headsets.
Mm-hmm.
People get worried about germs. So it was important for us to build something that can be viewed on a laptop where you can pan around, you can explore it that way. And also, the second reason is really shareability, being able to email it out or text message. And with ours, you can even send it out through Facebook and Twitter, where it's more of a marketing tool. Anyone goes, clicks the link, and they can view it on their own device.
Where do you think all of this is going?
Like I said, right now, architects, we're kind of in VR, but we're still using a computer with a mouse and a keyboard. And it's incredible. It takes years to learn these 3D modeling programs and get really fast. There are thousands of commands. But VR, I think being able to really inhabit the space itself and design at the same time is the next step. And I think that for sure will happen in the next few years.
Matthew Hoffman is co-founder of the company Gray Space. Matthew, thank you for coming by.
Yes, thank you very much.
More from us, as always, at marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.